Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Welcome to the show. Today, I'm very, very happy to have with us Mr. Gary Wilson. Gary is the founder of myinvestmentservices.com and a very experienced real estate investor. We're going to dive into all things multifamily. So without any further ado, Gary, welcome. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great, Devin. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and hopefully help your guys a little bit with some information, strategies, and even some examples. So I'm really appreciate the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, perfect. Likewise, glad to have you on and looking forward to diving in on some multifamily. One of the things I like to do kind of at the top of the interview is just let folks know where you're based out of in case there's somebody maybe in your backyard that wants to connect.
Okay. Well, that's a good question. The answer is unfortunately not very simple. My wife's Canadian, so she has her own place over there with a part-time up in Ontario. Mm-hmm. And in the States, I've got, locations pretty much all over the place. So I really, I don't have a defined property where I'm at all the time in the States. I'm a U.S. citizen, of course. However, the answer to the question, technically speaking, it's Florida, Lake City, Florida. But I could be away for months at a time and never actually see the place. It's just the lifestyle. I didn't anticipate this years ago, but it's just the way it evolved, developed. I'm glad because I like to travel and I'll have a lot of fun. And the funny thing is I met other people who do the same thing. In fact, in our mastermind group, there's a couple guys that they literally just like, constantly road warriors. It's amazing how many people do this,
Yeah. If you've got the financial wherewithal, you've got the freedom of the schedule and the desire to do it. Why not? Right. That's one of the reasons we do this whole investing thing. So there's lots to cover with you today. I mean, you're an author, you're a coach, ton of investment experience. What's your background look like in terms of kind of getting to the real estate investment space? If you could walk us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So way back from the beginning, I was always interested in houses. I would literally look through literally 6, 7, 8 years old, look at the ads, look online, not online, but look at the brochures and pamphlets, things like that. And when I was 8 years old, Devin, my granddad, he was a retired professor, and he taught mathematics and architecture and things like that. He got me a big giant drawing board with a T-square and everything and showed me how to do house plans. I was literally designing houses when I was 8 years old. So in any case, fast forward, my first year college roommate's a guy named Socrates, and we became fast friends, literally met during orientation, decided to become roommates. Go back to the student hall, and oddly enough, our parents are actually talking to each other. It's like, well, this was kind of meant to be. Been best friends ever since after college. His father was a Greek immigrant. Both his parents were 100% Greek. His mother was second generation. Father came over literally as an immigrant, and he started investing, and he taught us how to invest. Our first house we bought together, a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom ranch in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And he didn't give us money, Devin. He didn't give us the fish. He taught us how to fish, right?
Outstanding.
Yep. 1986, big year. Tax reform act of 86, one of the biggest ones ever. Removed a lot of loopholes for self-employed people like doctors. And that created opportunities for guys like Sock and I, brand new, literally less than a month out of college. So in any case, bought that first house, leased out the other 2 bedrooms. And then we lived almost literally for like $50 a month. It was crazy. Well, 2 years later, I get married. Socrates bought me out. I turned $3,000 into $8,000 in 2 years, living almost for free. And then fast forward, I got married, of course, moved to Pennsylvania, lived there for 24 years. And I was 35 years old, waking up one day. I remember if I'd have done what he had told Mr. DeMet at the first closing, Devin, he's like pounding his chest, saying, if you boys do what I tell you to do, you won't have to work for anybody else when you're 35 years old. Wake up when I'm 35, I'm thinking, man, I'm not liking this corporate stuff. Started investing on my own using the old Carlton Sheets type stuff, right? Back in the 80s. And 80s and 90s. And in any case, that's how I really got started buying little duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes based on, what I learned on late night TV doing the old Carlton Sheets program, which he gives away for free now, by the way. And then remember what Mr. DeMet had taught me. And that's what really got me started. I was 35 years old, bought 10 properties that year, about 30 units I bought that year, and just kept going from there. And I can, later on, we'll get into more details about the bigger buildings, but it all started with that kind of humble beginning. I mean, just one property, and then 10 years later, at a desperation to get out of the corporate world, buying small multi-units. And I was making enough money at the end of that first year, I literally could have retired then, you know, from the corporate world. I was chicken, though. It took me 5 years to have the guts to leave the corporate world.
Boy, can I relate to that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So what was it? I'm always curious to know, because this is such a great story. I love the stories that are completely organic and start from nothing, because that tells people that anybody could do it if they really, if they stick it out and they keep after it and they keep learning. I mean, I think that tenacity is like the number one skill here. All this stuff is learnable. The capital piece and the numbers of the business, right, that's all learnable. It's a matter of tenacity, right? So I'm always curious to learn what was the tipping point in the corporate world? Was it one specific thing? Was it just getting worn down? What was that for you?
I think on you literally on the first day of my first job out of college, I was like, I can't believe I'm going to be doing this for 40 years. I mean, I'm cooped up in a big building, literally wearing a suit, and outdoors was a great outdoors. And about 5 minutes away was the ocean, Atlantic Ocean, with the beach was where I wanted to be. So in any case, I gave it the best ever. I actually was getting promoted. I mean, I moved in from, I used to intern at NASA, Langley Air Force Base.
Oh, wow.
Worked on a space shuttle, yeah. And my first corporate job was with banking, and I ended up working on mergers and acquisitions. And I was actually pretty good. I was getting promoted, but the thing is, the more they promoted me, the worse it got. But here was the really final straw. I can't mention any bank names, of course, but the bank I was working with, if you remember back in the late 80s, Reagan deregulated banking. Banks were buying each other left and right. It was crazy. So, and it kept going for years. So what happened? I got getting promoted, moving up the corporate ladder. I was, you know, basically a high level manager, reporting directly to the executive level. And I had 10 different business applications I was managing, lots of people. Well, the 2002, if you think, remember the old tech stock bust, right? Recession, minor recession. We actually were coming out of that. And in late 2002, I knew the numbers because I was in IT. I had access to everything. We actually had a really good year. But what happened is the week of Christmas, 2002. Now, as soon as I say this, people will know who the bank is. But they called us all in on a Tuesday night. Christmas was on a Friday. And I'm thinking, this is going to be cool. They're going to announce a bonus at Christmas time for everybody because we've had a great year. They didn't announce a bonus. They announced the biggest layoff in the corporate history. Actually, the first one ever. And it was devastating. And they're telling us managers, hey, we made the decisions. We picked the people. And you got to go tell them tomorrow morning. Obviously, I didn't sleep well that night. Went in the next morning. My boss and I both got in at 6 in the morning because we're just driven people. And I said, Bob, I'm going to toe the company line and do this because it's my job. But I don't agree with it. We're making mistakes. Some people do not. We should keep them. And we were able to actually get replacement jobs for two of the folks, but the other four people couldn't save them. And I knew at that point, I told him, I said, there's going to be a day, Bob, I'm not going to want to work here anymore. If this is the way we're going to do things, this is not cool. You don't blindside somebody like this. You give them 6 months warning and, you know, this is horrible. You're going to kill morale for the people who are left here. And don't be surprised if more people leave on their own. And that's exactly what happened. And one of them was me. The following August, I resigned. I was 40 years old. And never looked back. I can't believe that was 17 years ago this year. And, you know, probably one of the best things I've ever done. I would do it if I had to feed my family, but quite frankly, I'd rather be an entrepreneur. But that was the moment I knew I'm not going to do it forever. And it took me 6 months to have the guts to make the move. I already had properties at that point. I already had my realtor's license, and I was helping other investors learn how to invest and making money that way too. But it was, I had children, I had 401k, I had 5 weeks vacation. I was doing pretty good. And to leave that was a big, big deal. But that was the final straw, Devin, that broke the camel's back, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you for painting that picture, Gary. That's, I think, something that a lot of people can relate to. And it's very hard to make that step. And like you said, it's one of the best decisions you ever made. I could say outside of, you know, family stuff and marrying my wife, like, everything else in my life, leaving and going out and doing my own thing as an entrepreneur was the best thing that I've done. So, thank you for painting that picture.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So you're out. clearly investing in real estate, you know, you kind of had that house hacking lesson early on before that was a term. What led you into the larger commercial multifamily space, and how did that transition work for you?
Well, really what happened, I tell you, was I knew that they were out there, the properties. I just didn't, my field of vision was at the 2 to 4 unit level. And I'm thinking, man, how do I get to the 100 unit level? Well, as it turns out, I did get my realtor's license, not to be a realtor, but to help me investing. And through a series of, I've called them Forrest Gump moments, you know, meeting the right people at the right time, ended up teaching like one or two Saturdays a month for a local guru who was had his own training program. And I liked it. And what happened is a lot of those students who knew I have a license said, hey, can you represent me? And first I said, no, I don't do that. I got my license for myself. And eventually I realized, well, God's trying to tell me something. Say yes. This is opportunity. Don't say no to opportunity. Say yes to it. Turns out another big, great move. I ended up making a lot of money doing that, building a brokerage company and serving all the investors in the community. And we were the fastest growing company 3 years running. We literally grew sixfold. It was amazing. In any case, as a result of that, Devin, I started attracting more professionals in their fields, like dentists, engineers, chiropractors, pilots, even firemen, policemen, for example, oddly enough, teachers too. And I recognized some of them were not doing all that no money down stuff. They were actually using money, not all the time, but more often than not, they're putting money down on better properties, buying bigger properties. And I thought, I'm going to watch what they're doing and get behind the scenes. And thank goodness I did. And I'll draw this out for you. This is what I found out. Okay, so let me draw this for you. I'll put it up on the screen. Okay,
great.
So what I was doing was called flatlining. I know this is a podcast, so people aren't going to be able to see this, but I was buying the same kind of properties over and over again and growing horizontally. I was adding volume to my life, but really not getting much ground. The better investors kept buying the next bigger property.
Interesting.
In terms of numbers, you know, and it wasn't what it was, Devin, it was a forced discipline, because our brains are telling us there's lots of duplexes, keep buying duplexes. And hey, it's working, keep doing that. These better investors, they force themselves, they discipline themselves to only buy the next bigger property, okay? And so I switched my strategy to do what they were doing. At first it was slow. I mean, my growth was like a curve. It started off slow and picked up steam over time. That's the big thing. When I learned that principle and I started realizing, well, that's what Robert Kiyosaki's doing, who I got to meet, by the way, about 4 years ago, I think it was. Grant Cardone. All of the top performers are not doing all that low down, no money down stuff with single family homes. They kept buying bigger and bigger properties. It's a matter of scale. I mean, if I go visit 100 single family homes, it'd take me 2 weeks. But if I go visit 100 unit building, I can do that in an afternoon. Rent increases. Think about it. You can't raise rents on all single family homes at the same time because there's different lease terms, and some of them you can do, some you can't. But on a 100 unit building over a period of a year, I can raise the rents across the board. So let's say I do that, you know, $20 a unit per month for a 100 unit building. That's $2,000 a month cash flow, $24,000 a year cash flow. And say you have a 10% cap rate, that means you just added nearly $250,000 to your net worth in one move, right? So that's a huge difference. One parking lot, you know, internal management, one roof set of boilers, one roof. There's so many advantages to buying the bigger buildings. And I'll tell you this later on, if you want to talk about financing, I'll show you exactly how I structure that financially speaking. But the main point is this is I set minimum thresholds for numbers of units for myself, and I kept increasing that with each subsequent purchase. And that really was, I can tell everybody listening to this, I know it sounds like that may be the long, hard way. It actually ended up being the fast way. Okay. The long, hard way was all that no money down, cheap properties done at the single family home level, duplex level. That's what was taken forever. It only looks easier because it's cheaper. The fact is, get the better properties in the right areas. So remember this, crappy properties, crappy tenants, nice properties, nice tenants. Okay.
Simple enough.
That's it, man. And that ended up also changing my whole philosophy on the quality of the property. I learned to use tools and strategies to tell me exactly where to buy, and based on my philosophy of getting multi-unit buildings. And I wasn't just taking a crapshoot. There were data-driven decisions. And turns out, even the REITs, REITs, that's what they're doing. They're using data to drive their decisions, and they're like flipping large apartment complexes. That's kind of what they do, you know? So that right there, Devin, was probably the biggest discovery I made, and it literally changed the projectile for my entire investing life, you know?
No doubt. Yep. And you're fighting against inertia when you're going up and forcing yourself to get into larger properties, because I see it all the time. The majority of people kind of gain mastery on one thing. You know, I was one of them too. Okay. You learn how to do buy a rental house, rehab it, and refinance all your money and cash flow. And holy smokes, what a great strategy. And it is. But then you go, well, let's rinse and repeat. That worked. And you do a bunch of those. And it's scary to get it, especially when you've got mastery of one thing. It's scary and difficult to start over and try to go master something else. And the guys that have gotten really big and really successful, they all did that, right? That's a common trait. And it's not easy to make that to make that jump, especially if you're already, you know, a successful investor in one area, but you got to do it. So I love that takeaway to force yourself to, you know, those of you that are listening audio only, you know, Gary showed kind of a stair step up, and instead of just repeating the single family stuff again and again, you force yourself to grow bigger. What was the what were you doing for capital on those initial multifamily projects? Was this your own equity? Were you raising money at that point?
Yeah. In the beginning, it was really just good old fashioned blocking and tackling. So I had I was pretty disciplined as far as money goes. I was able to save up quite a bit of money at the time. This is going back, my gosh, over 30 years now. And I'd accumulated, in addition to my retirement funds, I accumulated $50,000 in cash. And so I was prepared well to buy the first couple of properties, but right away, my capital is gone, right? So then what I did is I did the thing you just described there. I actually leveraged my own personal home, use a home equity line to buy another couple properties. Then I got what's called a personal line of credit. It's non-secured. It's just your signature. We used to call it a signature loan.
Sure.
Allowing you to buy more properties. Then I learned how to, we call it playing the credit card game, which I don't advocate for most people because it really takes discipline to do that well. But I bought literally dozens of properties on credit cards, right? And it was short-term debt. And I would always get the thing where you get 6 months, zero interest, that kind of thing. Well, by the time 6 months rolls around, I've already remodeled the place, you know, did the Burr method, buy, remodel, rent, refinance, you know, or put the thing back on the market. And that's how I got started down at the lower level part. But what was happening was, I'm really killing myself. I mean, working like a dog, and I'm never really gaining much ground. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
So when I switched over to the bigger properties, what I did is I started off the same way. Every dollar I got excess in rent, like my net operating income over and above expenses, I would save up to buy the next bigger property. I even used my commissions from using my license. But then what I did is really another game changer. It's another big moment for me. As there was a great teacher out there named Dave Ramsey, who teaches something called financial peace. And I applied it to my personal life, discarded a lot of excess baggage. It was just ridiculous, the money I was spending. And looking back, I call it stupid money. You know, that's what I was doing. And like totally opposite of where I was coming from, which was discipline. In any case, I applied it to my business life. And I started paying off the older properties with the small balances. And each time I paid off a property, of course, I had less debt and increased my cash flow. Which you might imagine, my growth in equity and cash flow started turning up. It was more of the curve had turned a point. So here's what I did. I just followed what the gurus were doing, the top level investors. And it's not that they didn't borrow. They definitely got on a cash basis, which was what I was doing. But it doesn't mean you don't borrow. What it means is instead of leading with debt, you gotta borrow the money to buy the property. What I was doing was using cash. Now that's in the beginning. What I eventually did was this. This is where it's gonna get interesting for the listeners here. Is I thought, well, I'm building up this substantial equity. I don't want to leave that there. This is real estate. I want to leverage my equity to acquire new assets. And I went to these lenders and said, look, I want to get a line of credit across my portfolio to buy the next bigger property. And I have substantial equity. So I thought, well, the answer would be yes. You know, almost all of them said no. It was crazy. Because the commercial lenders, at this point, you're getting commercial money, not traditional. Like, I haven't done FHA for 30-something years. Most investors don't like that. We'll do conventional commercial or do creative financing, things like that, which I'll talk about in a minute. But what it is, I finally found a lender who said, look, I'll give you 50% loan to value, which was enough for me to go out and buy the next property. So I got a line of credit. And if people want to write this down, it was a blanket mortgage across my portfolio, line of credit in the commercial world. Blanket mortgage, line of credit. Went out and bought the next big property. Took my, about 3 years to improve things, raise the rents, make it twice as valuable as it was when I bought it. Then went out and got a brand new mortgage on that. Only 50% loan to value, by the way, because I like being 50% leveraged, and that was it. In any case, I took that the proceeds from that new loan, right, because the property was free and clear prior to that. The debt was on other properties. In any case, paid back the line of credit. Now, when I paid back the line of credit and added another income-producing asset to my portfolio, what do you think that lender did for me on that line of credit? He increased it.
Yep.
He raised it up. And that's, Devin, that's when everything really turned a corner. I knew at that point I was financially independent. And the other big thing is this, is I evolved from borrowing and needing to borrow to get the property to be able to acquire the property and the borrowing strategically later on against that asset. And that's where it really puts you in control. When you're in control, when you can borrow strategically against your own assets, you're in control. You can't, the bankers start calling you, right? So that was a huge difference. Now, we did some other creative things too. I will tell you, we did some pretty big projects. We actually created a closed-end mutual fund one time. So we teamed up with a commodities broker from Wall Street and drew up, that's basically a big form of syndication. It's actually a mutual fund. And you got to pass securities exchange, requirements and tests and all that kind of stuff. So in any case, what we did is we raised money from qualified investors, minimum 10,000, everything up to like 100,000. And what we did is we went out and bought portfolios of properties. And I was able to go out and locate them. So I was the broker on those deals. So we took the investors' money, bought these portfolios of properties. I got all the commissions on that. And what we did is we graded them, A, B, C. The ones we could sell like that, we would sell and get rid of them. And then we'd pay off and get rid of the small investors, like the people that just put in 10 grand, we just pay them off and get rid of them. And we would keep the 100,000 investors and make them, we would give them a share of profit. So net operating income came in every month, they get a share of that. If we sold another property, they get a share of that. Basically made them profit sharing partners. And eventually, we could pay them off if we wanted to. But in any case, I also got the management contracts on this property. So now I had broker's commissions coming in and management fees coming in. I mean, I was looking like things were looking pretty good, right? So that's an example of what you can do when you start buying bigger properties is you attract other people at that sphere, that level. And sometimes you're buying a building, sometimes you're buying a portfolio of other properties. And when you can structure deals that way where you're using other people's money, it's a great way to buy properties. And you really have low risk on your part, and you can obviously participate. But in this case, I was basically putting things together and paying myself in the way of brokers' commissions and management fees. And they loved it, So that's a great strategy for your listeners if they're already at the 100 unit level mark and they want to buy bigger properties or big portfolios. Is I'm not an attorney, I'm not a tax accountant, but you can definitely find attorneys who are familiar with security exchange law and set up your own. You could do small scale syndications, but you can do what we did and do a large scale. Just do a basically create your own mutual fund, So I wanted to share that because it's different than what we were talking about. And the reason I wanted to share it, Devin, is I wanted to show people that as you move up that scale, more and more opportunities will come your way. And some of them are going to be different like this. And I just learned in the past, you know what? Don't say no because I don't know how or never did that before. Say yes because I want to learn how. And I know when I commit, chances are there's people I know that can help me find the other people that I need to know to help me succeed at that. That was one of the biggest lessons in basically having guts to make those big commitments,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a team sport, and it's, again, once you have success at something, it's easy to stay there. And so constantly pushing the envelope and pushing your own comfort level is important. I have a question personally on setting up the fund. It's a really interesting approach. What was your just kind of high level on the timeline to structure that? And then, the fees and so forth, as far as putting it together. And then I guess the last question I have is, you're then accepting funds and you got to pretty quickly deploy those, right? Or you're kind of on the hook for a return that it needs to be deployed in an asset, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, it's one of those risk reward things. And I will tell you that as you grow personally, whether it's in business relationships, what have you, sometimes growth is very uncomfortable, right?
Right.
In fact, most success does not come while you're being comfortable. Most success comes because your discomfort comes from the process. So, but back to your question, technically, we were lucky because we had partnered with the right guy. He was I'll just tell you, he was the number one tobacco commodity broker on the planet. And he was well connected on Wall Street. And at the time, a lot of Wall Street guys were leaving Wall Street. They were like, I mean, I'm thinking, if they're leaving Wall Street, what chance do I have of succeeding on Wall Street? And a lot of, you saw, a lot of hedge funds were starting to move into real estate and gobble up giant blocks of properties and tapes. In any case, this was kind of part of that whole frame. And for us, it took about 6 months to get the proper paperwork constructed through the approval process. What I was told, though, was only because we had the right people. Most cases, it'd probably take you a year to pull this off. Okay. Well, in the meantime, you're asking investors to commit their money to this. They got to actually pledge their funds. And they don't give it to you, but they're pledging it. And the fact is, if you take too long in the building phase, you'll lose them. They're going to lose patience. They're going to say, well, I'm going on somewhere else. The other part of the challenge is, you hit the nail on the head, is you've got to have assets at the ready for them to gobble up as soon as you get the green light. And thank goodness we did. We had a couple of portfolios ready and waiting. We already tied them up contractually. And thankfully, we were able to get our paperwork in for the exchange security paperwork in 6 months and approved in 6 months. So when it was all said and done, the whole thing was all over and done with in less than a year. And we were off and running. So the risks are, yes, you've got to ask people to pledge funds, and you've got to have your structure created and approved to be able to actually do the mutual fund from the Fed as fast as you can. And at the same time, you've also got to have assets that you're identified that to purchase and invest in. So that's three major things that all have to hit at the right time. And if one of them's taking too long, it's too easy to get people to be frustrated and say, I'm tired of waiting. I'm going somewhere else, you know? So good question, because I can tell you that's not something I would recommend for the novice investor. That's definitely an advanced strategy. But if we're talking about 100 unit buildings or more, this should not be too outlandish. And I'd love for people to give me feedback and say, you know what, Gary, I like the concept. I've got a couple hundred units right now, and I'd be willing to entertain that kind of a thing. And you and I, Devin, can maybe kind of work on that. I'll pull up the old paperwork and see if it's something we would entertain down the road. Big project. Right now, I'm sort of in pseudo-retirement mode. I mean, I teach because I enjoy it, things like that. I do participate passively. It's just I've got a lot of gray hair over the years. And so I'm enjoying life, and I will participate passively. I don't mind at all guiding people and giving them strategic guidance and sharing my experience. I even share contracts and paperwork and stuff like that. You know, I don't mind at all. If it helps people, I'm glad to do it, you know?
Yeah, that's really great. Well, thanks for some insight into setting that up. It's one of those things we've kind of looked at before, and at this phase, you know, it didn't make sense, but obviously it does make sense at some point. So given that you've been investing for a long time, you've kind of seen some of these cycles come, whether it's SNL stuff, whether it's tech stuff or mortgage-backed securities in 2008, you know, you've seen the ups and downs. You're looking at it through that experience lens. How do you feel about where we are now? And what's your strategy kind of?
Yeah, again, the funny thing is, as soon as I say it, something will change, and it'll change it, because I've had these feelings before.
Of course. Yeah.
And a perfect example is I've been through four decent sized recessions. Of course, the last one was major. That was, quite frankly, close to the depression. But what I learned is I just learned to expect them. I'm thinking, you know what? Mm-hmm. It's just a natural part of the flow of business. Just learn to expect it, guys, because it's going to happen. Don't worry about if it's going to happen or when it's going to happen. Just know it's going to happen. And you know, be prepared for it. Don't worry about it. Just say, okay, if it's going to happen, what can I do? Well, you can acquire income producing assets like we're talking about. Now, according to where we are now, based on history and what I've seen and talking to other people that I know and trust, some of them started calling for this next one as early as 2016. I mean, publicly calling for it. The thing is, the last big one, they started calling for it, I mean, in earnest around 2002. Some, even Barron's was saying, even before the tech bubble in 2000, Barron's was calling for the big recession in the late 90s, right? It didn't actually hit until the fourth, about August, September 2007 is when we knew we were in deep dookie. I mean, it was just like the bottom was dropping out fast. Mortgage brokers, one third of them left the industry before Christmas, before Thanksgiving, actually. It was insane. And then you saw 2008, 2009, it just got worse. So in any case, I don't believe we're in for that kind of a thing. That's not, I think this next correction is going to be more of a traditional run-of-the-mill, good old-fashioned recession that's basically driven by overheating. We're just, look at prices in real estate now. It's crazy with things all across the country. But I think this is going to be more driven by traditional factors and not a real estate driven recession. I could be completely wrong. The last recession was absolutely real estate driven, just flat out. We just basically clobbered everything and we sucked everybody into this big vortex. And most recessions, if you think about it, is driven by other factors. Interest rates are too high. Prices are overheating, gas, all this kind of stuff. And then GDP pulls back and you fall into a little recession. It looks to me like that's the kind of thing that's going to happen. But as soon as I say it, something will happen tomorrow politically or economically to totally change everything. You know? So
yeah,
timing wise though, I think we're actually near the peak. If you look at the market the last year, how many times it wobbled a couple times, right? If you look at the history of recessions, almost every time there's that wobbling effect right before the drop. I wish I could tell you, I think it's going to happen this year, next year. We really don't know. I just think we have all the ingredients in place for it to happen. Let's put it that way.
So. Yeah, that's great feedback. And what is admittedly an unfair question, right? But, you know, you having seen it a lot, I love the takeaway to just expect it. You know, it's going to happen. We know that. None of that this time's different nonsense, right? We just know that these things happen. Usually recessions are relatively short compared to the expansion periods. If you expect it, and in terms of multifamily projects, you buy a good cash flowing project with reasonable debt on it. Don't make any outrageous assumptions on rent growth or anything, then you're probably in a good spot to ride something out if you have to. So
absolutely,
that's great. Yeah, that's great feedback. I appreciate it. So what are some, I want to kind of, since you are a coach and you mentor people through this kind of thing, I'd like to distill kind of some takeaways on somebody that's maybe newer getting into large commercial multifamily. And, you know, we could probably talk for the next 24 hours here and have a 24-hour podcast, but there's constraints on that. What are some, I guess, key takeaways you have for somebody maybe looking to get into multifamily investing?
Okay. Well, it depends on where they are. So if somebody is brand spanking new, I know it sounds conservative, guys, but you know what? Just buy a duplex just to see what it's like, because it may look glamorous, like I'm going to be a big real estate investor. But I can tell you there's the yin and the yang to this, just like there's yin and the yang to everything. There's good and bad, pros and cons, good tenants, bad tenants, good days, bad days. So I would rather you learn that expand your emotional intelligence on a small scale as opposed to jumping in big. Now, having said that, one of our good business brothers, Andy Cushman, his first property was a 94-unit building. Go figure. So there goes my philosophy. But most people, though, you're going to have to learn from experiencing it, and it's probably better to learn. We call that learn small, learn on a small scale. Then you can crank up the gas and go big, right? So learn the ropes on a small scale, small, low risk, low everything. And if you say, you know what, this is cool, I like this like I did, then definitely crank up the heat. And what I would suggest is grow in increments, just like that stair step thing I showed you. You know, I know we all want that 100-unit building, but the thing is, you know, maybe your next move should be a 10-unit, and then a 30-unit, and then a 50-unit, and then do the 100-unit. Now, if you're in working with a guy like you, Devin, I would say they're definitely in good hands and they could probably jump right up from 10 to 100 and be fine, you know. But there's not a lot of guys like you out there, unfortunately. So I would rather them team up with one of the good guys like you. I mean, I do coach people, but I will tell you just full disclosure here. I don't actively promote it. I don't publish it. It's something I keep private. And the reason is I want to train people first on a small scale, you know, getting the duplexes, fourplexes, see how they operate, see if they're action takers, if they can handle the emotional strain sometimes. And if they do, then I can take them on privately as a coaching client. But you'll, if you look, you'll see, I don't really publish that or promote that too much. Cause I would rather like select people based on my experience with them training wise on a smaller scale. But for everybody else, I mean, my gosh, you got a great guy in Devin right here. I mean, he's a perfect person to partner with. You know, why not go that route? I mean, I'll be glad to help you, but I would, at a certain point, you know, we're going to get to a point where we're going to be doing some bigger projects, and anymore, I just participate with other people. I don't actively look at the 100 unit building. I just say, send me the financial statement, send me the rent rolls, send me all the data. And if I'm interested, I'll kick in a few bucks, you know? But for everybody listening, it's really important that you do get some mentorship. I can't emphasize enough. I mean, my gosh, remember I told you about that first property right out of college? It took me 10 years to buy the next one because I thought I can do this on my own. I can figure this out on my own. I'm smart enough. We have something called the success tax. Guys, you can either pay for it once. And when you pay for the good stuff, you only cry once, by the way. You only cry once when you make one move right the first time. But if you decide to do it on your own, just know this. You're going to pay the success tax multiple times over a lot of years. And it's far more painful. It'll hold you back. You know, just it's better to rip off the Band-Aid, align yourself with a good person who's been there, done that, will spend time with you. And when I coach people, I don't really limit the contact. I just tell them, you know what, we got strategic calls lined up. But if you're out there in the field and it's a Saturday afternoon and something's going sideways, text me. Don't wait till Monday. Text me. This is too critical. I don't mind. But you know, I just want to make sure that we have a respectful relationship. But in any case, back to what I was saying is I was blessed enough to have a great mentor early on, my college roommate's dad. The next guy was I have something about foreign mentors. The next guy was Gerhard Flugfelder. So it's this old German guy. And he took me to that next level, Devin. And then after that, honestly, I've been able to meet some pretty neat guys, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, things like that. I mean, it really is an interesting, I want to pinch myself sometimes because I still consider myself a regular guy. But I got to where I am because I was able to force myself to take action in spite of fear. And number one, number two is I always made sure I put myself in position to meet people at that next level, introduce myself, ask good questions, and they will literally help you up that pyramid of success. And so we call that paying it forward, just like in Boy Scouts. If you ever were, anybody listening was ever a scout, you have an Eagle project. Well, the people helping on your Eagle project are the younger guys, right? And then they come up, you've already moved on, and they're going to have people help them do their Eagle project. So what you do is you pay it forward. It's based on faith. It's basically the honor system. And anybody help, I always ask people I help say, look, you know, make sure you pass this on and help the next guy, you know, because I had to get where I am by myself, you know. So I'm trying to go on that, yep. But that's an awesome question, you know.
Yeah, no, that's such a critical takeaway. And I feel the same way. I'm a link in a chain. And so many people have helped me that are way further along than I am. And yeah. When I've got an opportunity to help people that want to kind of move up, that's very rewarding too. So you're right. It's a team sport. And it's rewarding too, to be able to kind of illuminate somebody with that knowledge of the next step or whatever. Gary, thank you. You've added a ton of value here. I really appreciate it. If folks want to reach out or get connected, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, there's a, they can call 1-800-931-2605. And just tell them, introduce themselves. They'll get one of the front office people. They'll patch them through to me. They can also email me. Honestly, I'll just give my email. It's gary@myinvestmentservices.com. I don't mind answering emails. And I will tell you, I've got a, I'm not sure when this is going up, but I do 3-day events twice a year. The next one happens to be August 23rd, 24th, 25th. In Boston, which is where I am right now, Boston, Mass. This was 2019, of course. And anybody any Go Bundes brother, Devin, that I work with, I always tell people, you know what? If you or your guys want to come up there, I'll waive the conference fee. usually $1,000. If they're like a member, like I had this community site they can be part of. Oh, this is really good, Devin, for your folks. Guys, I've trained over 3,000 real estate agents all over the U.S. and Canada to serve us investors. That's one of my pet peeves was the agents were generally not really well equipped to help us. And I said, I'm going to solve that and I'll train them how to do that. So I created a training program just for them. Well, if they want to be part of the community site, if they go onto that website, myinvestmentservices.com, just click on members area and they'll see how they can participate. There's two different levels. Just get the, do it for free for a month. There's like a free version you can get. Check it out. And guys, you can find the people out there who are trained to help you and help you get started like I did. In any case, they're going to be at the conference, right? So they could actually meet some of these folks there and really help them catapult their business. The other thing is I do have a podcast. It's called Real Estate Investing for Professional Men and Women. And it's on Stitcher and iTunes, iHeartRadio. And it really is geared towards people who are professionals in their fields, often business owners, that really are interested in investing or already are investing. That's a great way for people to network and get some great ideas on their businesses and also investing too. So I'd say that's probably enough for them to kind of reach out. I don't mind at all sharing what I've got. You know, they can get some of my books for free and have at it, learn as much as you can learn. If you like what you see, just say, hey girl, I want to be part of that. And then raise your hand and we'll get you started, you know? So.
Yeah, this is great. Well, we'll be sure to include all that in the show notes. Okay. Myinvestmentservices.com is kind of the main catch-all there, but we're going to link to the podcast, to the books, to the website, and everything. So, Gary, thank you very much for joining today. It was great catching up.
You're welcome, Devin. I appreciate the opportunity, man. And just keep me posted. If you need anything, just give me a holler. I don't mind helping, you know?
Perfect. Thanks, Gary.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.